Hello, everybody. Very much welcome in the Academy of the Arts. I'm very proud to have you here, especially our guests from America, Australia, Africa. And we are looking very much forward to have a discussion here in the Academy, which will shake us as an art institution as well as the politics and economics. We started to work on the program Colonial Repercussions 1 year ago when we finished the exhibition project Uncertain States. It was an artistic project which has been related to the question of migration of refugees in a historical way to the period of 1933 to 45 and the actual migration movement in 2015. We tried to understand why Europe and Germany has been overwhelmed by the migration of hundreds of thousands of refugees from Near East and Africa. And analyzing the situation in 2015-16, we had to focus on the fact that the crisis of Europe and its values was deeply rooted in our colonial past. The Academy of the Arts, founded in 1696, is part of a European culture connected to the period of enlightenment as well as colonization of the world. We have to rethink our history today, and we have to develop formats and programming and thinkings and thoughts which are deconstructing our unconscious self-understanding. This conference is the starting point of a long-term process. Colonial Repercussions has been created by a group of individuals. It was Thomas Krüger, I welcome you very much, who encouraged us to start with the topic. From the beginning, our president, Janine Meerapfel, she can't be here now at this moment, supported the project. Together with Natasha Kelly, with Nikita Davan, very much welcome, and Anana Adusaipoko, we developed the concept and the structure for this program, which will have, as I said it before, repercussion also to our programming in the next years. And we had the chance to continue the very productive cooperation with ECCHR and his director Wolfgang Kalek and Karina Teurer, who are responsible for this first conference today and tomorrow. For the Academy, it is my colleague and friend Judith Weber who did a wonderful job to make the event happen. I'm very thankful to Wolfgang Kalek that he can start the topic on postcolonial injustice and legal interventions. And I'm very proud to have you all here. Very warm welcome to our international guests again. Thank you so much for coming to Berlin and to the Academy of the Arts. The idea is to create an open space for lectures and panels, panel discussions, as well as for artistic intervention. Probably you have seen the intervention of the video production of Marcel Odenbach in the Max Liebermann Saal, and I want to announce the intervention, the video installation of Harrison Heraclito in the ground floor, -3, a wonderful installation, and we have the chance later to talk about your work. Colonialism is not only a political, social, or economic phenomenon. It is rooted in European academic institutions, in philosophy, and in the arts. My position is very clear for the Academy. Colonialism is not a topic for specialists. Every institution in Europe also, especially in the education field, in education institutions, has to rethink its own narratives. This is what we start to do in the Academy. And colonialism is a topic which has to be reflected from both sides, the colonizers and the colonized. So I always say we have to do our job too, our work too. We cannot change the past, but we can change our present. We have the responsibility to create a climate of respect and of recognition, of dehumanization, of injustice, of exploitation, of reparations. In Germany, we have to extend our narrative, which is deeply based on the Holocaust. Without the colonial repercussions, we will not find a utopian perspective for Europe. Thank you very much. Thomas Krüger, the president of the Bundeszentrale für politische Bildung, who supported very gratefully this event, will talk to you. Thank you.
Sehr geehrter Nikita Davan, lieber Johannes Odenthal, lieber Wolfgang Kalek, sehr geehrter Professor Makao Mutua, sehr geehrter Professor Anthony Engi, meine sehr verehrten Damen und Herren, Ausgangspunkt unserer Kooperation zwischen der Akademie der Künste und der Bundeszentrale für politische Bildung ist der virulente Befund, dass unter anderem kulturelle und edukative Institutionen in unserem Land immer noch blind bezüglich der kolonisierenden Vergangenheit Deutschlands sind. Da kann man sich auch nicht mit dem Argument herausreden, dass der Holocaust die Erinnerungskultur präge und quasi allen anderen Vergangenheiten versiegle. Es ist nicht hinnehmbar, dass im Namen eines grenzenlosen Unrechts ein anderes grenzenloses Unrecht quasi verzwergt und unsichtbar gemacht wird. Wir brauchen öffentliche Resonanzräume, die sich diesem Befund stellen und Wege zu einer Institutionen-Selbstkritik bahnen. Ein umfassender Dekolonisierungsprozess der gesamten Gesellschaft ist längst überfällig und er hat mehrere Dimensionen, denen wir uns mit dieser Veranstaltungsreihe stellen wollen. Mit einer fangen wir heute an. Wenn wir über koloniales bzw. postkoloniales Unrecht sprechen, sprechen wir zwangsläufig auch über Strafverfolgung. Sie ist nicht nur ein wichtiger, wenn nicht sogar elementarer Schritt hin zur materiellen Gerechtigkeit für die Opfer und ihre Angehörigen. Die Strafverfolgung trägt zur Stabilisierung von Postkonfliktgesellschaften bei. Sie versucht, die Wahrheit zu ermitteln oder sich dieser zumindest anzunähern. Wolfgang Kalek bezeichnete Gerichte einmal zutreffend als mögliche Foren des Protests. Durch die Gerichtsverfahren wird nicht nur Unrecht geahndet und Recht gesprochen, die Verfahren erzeugen vor allem Öffentlichkeit und Aufmerksamkeit. Sie sind Aushandlungsorte für Fragen, die eine strafrechtliche Aufarbeitung allein nicht beantworten kann. Beispielsweise, wann Schuld und vor allem schwere Schuld als aufgearbeitet gilt. Oder aber, was Gerechtigkeit ist. Sie ist nämlich nicht per se vorhanden, sie kann nicht per Dekret verordnet werden. Was in einer Gesellschaft allgemeingültig als gerecht empfunden wird, ist immer Gegenstand gesellschaftlicher Aushandlungsprozesse. Wessen Verbrechen werden überhaupt vor Gericht gestellt und vor allem welche nicht? Wessen Opferleid wird sichtbar? Um diese Fragen verhandeln zu können und überhaupt ins Bewusstsein und die Öffentlichkeit zu holen, braucht es Resonanzräume. In den Gerichtssälen geht es nämlich nicht allein um eine strafrechtliche Verfolgung, sie schaffen genau solche Resonanzräume. Und darin sind sie den Resonanzräumen der politischen Bildung verwandt, über die ich, sehen Sie es mir nach, einige Worte verlieren muss. Es gehört zur Aufgabe meiner Institution, der Bundeszentrale für politische Bildung, Verständnis für politische Sachverhalte zu fördern, das demokratische Bewusstsein zu festigen und die Bereitschaft zur politischen Mitarbeit zu stärken. Dem kann die politische Bildung nur gerecht werden, wenn sie gesellschaftliche Aushandlungsprozesse in den Blick nimmt. Und sie muss noch einen Schritt darüber hinausgehen und zur kritischen und selbstkritischen Auseinandersetzung mit hegemonialen Meinungen anregen. Denn wir sind nicht die Pressestelle der Machtrepräsentanz, sondern Platzhalter kontroverser Aushandlungsprozesse. Wir haben dafür Sorge zu tragen, dass Resonanzräume entstehen und Diskursmöglichkeiten eröffnet werden. Im Konzept dieser Veranstaltungsreihe Koloniales Erbe, Colonial Repercussions, heißt es, ich zitiere, die europäische Aufklärung und damit das Fundament der westlichen Wertegemeinschaft, der Wissenskanon, Die Institutionen, die Sammlungen hatten ihre materiellen Grundlagen zu einem wesentlichen Teil in kolonialen Herrschaftsstrukturen. Zugleich hat der bis heute behauptete Anspruch der Aufklärung an universaler Gültigkeit zu einer fortdauernden Hierarchisierung von Kulturen geführt. Aus diesem Grund ist eine Kritik eigener Gewissheiten essentiell für die Fortsetzung des Projekts Aufklärung. Zitat Ende. Die Bundeszentrale für politische Bildung ist eine Bildungsinstitution, die Wissen vermittelt und damit Gewissheiten schafft. Und genau das macht sie zu einem zentralen Deutungsort. Wir sind Teil der seit Jahrzehnten wirkenden hegemonialen Wissenskulturen und Produkte. Wir haben sie über Jahrzehnte aktiv mitproduziert und auch reproduziert. Und wir tun das womöglich noch heute. Dessen müssen wir uns unbedingt gewahr sein, vielleicht sogar oft erst gewahr werden. Denn wie jede andere Strategie auch, ist Wissen weder universal noch folgenlos. Und das gilt nicht nur für unsere Einrichtung, das gilt für die meisten kulturellen Institutionen und Einrichtungen in diesem Land genauso. Sie sind nämlich Platzhalter weißer, privilegierter Infrastrukturen. Wir müssen uns deshalb die Frage nach kognitiver Gerechtigkeit stellen. Was gilt warum und wo als Wissen? Wer definiert Wissen? Wer hat Zugang zu welchem Wissen? Wer profitiert von der jeweiligen Bildungspolitik? Welche Perspektiven werden wahrgenommen? Wenn wir uns genau diese Frage aufrichtig stellen, bekommen wir auch Ignoranz der Blindstellen in den Blick. Was wissen wir nicht? Was wollen wir nicht wissen? Welche Perspektiven werden nicht wahrgenommen und warum? Bisher hat sich die politische Bildung sehr stark von Zielgruppengedanken leiten lassen und dabei vielleicht an der einen oder anderen Stelle übersehen, dass Subjekte in der Erziehung, in der Bildung geformt werden. Die postkoloniale Theoretikerin Gayatri Spivak hat auf diesen Umstand aufmerksam gemacht, indem sie Education, verstanden als Erziehung wie Bildung, als, Zitat, möglichst zwangsfreie Neuordnung von Begehren beschrieben hat. Ein Nachdenken, was in den Subjekten wie und mit welchen Konsequenzen neu geordnet wird, ist genauso unabdingbar wie die Reflexion des eigenen Standpunktes. In diesem Sinne fasst Paul Mecherel, Direktor des Center for Migration, Education and Cultural Studies an der Universität Oldenburg, Bildung als ein, Zitat, sich selbst durch Wissen in Frage stellen zu lassen, Zitat Ende, auf. Er schlägt als Zielstellung von Bildung vor, nochmal ein Zitat, sich zu den epochaltypischen Schlüsselproblemen globaler Ungleichheit in ein Verhältnis zu setzen. Zitat Ende. Das heißt, dass sich politische Bildung nicht damit begnügen darf, Wissen über globale, europäische, deutsche oder lokale Verhältnisse zu vermitteln, sondern sie muss auch dazu anregen, dass sich die Individuen und sozialen Gruppen mit ihrer mehr oder weniger privilegierten Stellung in der Welt auseinandersetzen und sich ihrer Involviertheit in Strukturen globaler Ungleichheit und Gewalt sowie ihrer spezifischen Handlungsmöglichkeiten bewusst werden. Oder um es mit Spivak zu sagen, die Hinterfragung der eigenen Privilegien bleibt eine Notwendigkeit. Gerade deshalb braucht es eine Solidarität untereinander Unvertrauten, wie Mecherel es beschreibt. Das bedeutet zweierlei, wobei beides eng miteinander verknüpft ist. Zum einen geht es darum, von sich selbst Abstand zu nehmen. Das heißt, die eigenen identitären und materiellen Interessen reflektierend zurückzustellen, wenn man so will, zu vernachlässigen. Zum anderen heißt Solidarität aber auch, die anderen als Subjekte anzuerkennen und ihnen im inklusiven Sinn Subjektivität zu ermöglichen und zuzugestehen. Politische Bildung wird sich deshalb aktiv an der Konstruktion und Dekonstruktion von Identitäten beteiligen müssen, indem sie Räume des Aushandelns hierfür schafft. Solche Prozesse stellen einen wichtigen Schritt der politischen Subjektwerdung dar und letztlich auch der Entstehung und Definition von heterogenen Gesellschaften. Es gilt, Aspekte wie Ungewissheit, Utopie, Diversität und Ambiguität zu fördern, die für die Zukunftsoffenheit der demokratischen Gesellschaften unabdingbar und fundamental sind. Dabei können die juristische Aufarbeitung wie die politische Bildung als quasi Wahlverwandte ihren Beitrag leisten. Wer Vielfalt demokratisch leben und als Ziel verfolgen will, muss die aus Vergangenheit und Gegenwart resultierenden globalen Ungleichheiten nicht nur moderieren, sondern bearbeiten, bekämpfen und überwinden. Vielen Dank für Ihre Aufmerksamkeit und ich gebe jetzt das Wort weiter an Nikita Dhawan.
As one of the protagonists of Salman Rushdie's novel famously points out, the problem with the British is that their history happened elsewhere, which is why they're ignorant of it. I would argue that this is not just a British problem, but also holds for the German-speaking context, which for a very long time distanced itself from post-colonial critique with the claim that neither Germany nor Austria nor Switzerland were major colonial powers. In light of these considerations, I am cautiously optimistic that in recent years there has been increased effort and interest in addressing the legacies of colonialism in the German-speaking context. Making an important contribution to this conversation is the series of three symposia organized by the Akademie der Künste. I'd like to take this opportunity to congratulate Johannes Odenthal and Judith Weber for their efforts to put together this incredible program, and Wolfgang Kalleck and Karina Theurer for kick-starting the series with this fantastic symposium on postcolonial injustice and legal interventions. In the past few years, there's been increasing debate whether postcolonial scholarship that draws on the legacies of European enlightenment and concepts like human rights, transnational justice, and international law are reproducing Eurocentrism. Especially Latin American scholars like Walter Mignolo and Ramon Grossvogel, namely proponents of the decolonial approach, categorically reject the Enlightenment as harbinger of exploitation and destruction in the form of colonialism and capitalism, and critique the ideological erasures and hollow claims of the emancipatory nature of European Enlightenment. They propose a return to uncontaminated non-Eurocentric indigenous cosmologies and epistemologies. These critics view Enlightenment legacies with suspicion, as an alibi for former colonial powers to exercise domination while promising equality, freedom, and emancipation. This echoes the warning of the black queer feminist Audre Lorde, who tells us the master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. In contrast, advocates argue that as gifts of European enlightenment to the world, human rights, secularism, transnational justice, international law enable the globe's silent majority to find its voice. This is an excellent example of the normative dilemmas faced by postcolonial societies and postcolonial states vis-a-vis the legacies of European colonialism. On the one hand, human rights, transnational justice, international law, which are the embodiment of Enlightenment ideals, are repeatedly mobilized to justify intervention in non-Western contexts and in some ways violate the sovereignty of post-colonial states. The imperial origins of international institutions and the international law affirm American supremacy as dispensers of justice and rights. Third world approaches to international law has been a very important intervention to contest the civilizing impulse of international law and international institutions. At the same time, by drawing on international law and norms of transnational justice and human rights, even if at times unsuccessfully, postcolonial societies and states attempt to dismantle the master's house with his own tools. This makes international law simultaneously the site for domination as well as resistance. The open question is, how do specific conceptions of justice, right, legitimacy become normative and globally hegemonic? And whether these norms are enabling for disenfranchised communities or whether the subaltern can be heard in international law? I'd like to argue that human rights, transnational justice, and international law are like pharmacon, as Jacques Derrida and Gayatri Spivak argue. They can be both poison but also medicine. The challenge is how to transform poison into counterpoison, into remedy. I look forward to the talks and discussions in the next 2 days and wish us all a very inspiring symposium. Thank you very much.
Yeah, good evening. Oh, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you very much, Nikita, Thomas, and Johannes. And a very warm welcome to our guests, especially those who came from far away, like Bernardus and Esther from Namibia. Right time to come here, thank you very much. But also to the others who came from Singapore, from Bombay, Brazil, the US, and the rest of Europe. These days you will find a number of articles on colonialism in German newspapers, especially about your case, the Ova Herrero and Nama case against Germany in New York, but also about the discussions after Macron's speech about the return of robbed artifacts. But normally, this chapter of European and German history is regarded as a frozen past, nothing to do with today's realities. This is one of the reasons why we decided to hold this series. We, that's the Academy of Arts, the Bundeszentrale für politische Bildung, and my organization, the European Center for Constitutional and Human Rights, which is working with the poison medicine Nikita just rightly described. And we had actually a quite interesting cooperation 1.5 years ago in the academy, Memory and Justice, an exchange between art, law, and civil society. And that's the kind of interdisciplinary dialogue we try to mobilize in order to convert poison into medicine. So it's clear if you deal with complex historical and current crimes like colonialisms, like the military dictatorships in Latin America, like torture in Guantanamo, Syria, you have to mobilize lawyers as well as civil society, as well as arts, science, and everyone. So colonialism and colonial crimes and today's post-colonial injustice deserves a deeper look by every of these groups, but especially by us, the lawyers. Those lawyers, there are a few, I can assure you, are still an absolute minority amongst the lawyers. And so one of the main goals for us as an NGO is to mobilize also lawyers in the legal community against colonial and post-colonial justice, against an unjust world economic order, and ongoing violations of human rights committed by states and transnational companies towards global justice. As you can see on the agenda of the symposium, it's divided into two parts. The first part is a more theoretical discussion on post-colonial perspectives on international law. The second day is focused on legal interventions in post-colonial times. Our two keynote speakers, Anthony Engie and Marco Matua, are from a group which is probably well known to all of you, the Third World Approaches Towards International Law, TWAIL. They will point out that public international law contains in its very foundings many legal figures which legitimated colonialism, including the robbery of land and resources, such as the infamous civilizing mission. Moreover, many of these figures are still inscribed in public international law. As a new economic world order was never established, although formal independence was granted or struggled for by the new states, development policies, trade relations, and the global financial systems are mirroring the asymmetries produced by colonial history. How to challenge these injustices will be discussed in the second panel by Obiora, Chinua Okafor, Celine Tan, Luis Eslava, and Isabel Feichner. In the evening, you have heard about from Johannes already about Marcel Odenbach's and Ayerson Heraklitos' artistical intervention. For those of you who haven't seen them, one is in the basement, and the other one is downstairs. So please use the breaks to go there. And for those of you who haven't heard from Fiston Mansa Muila or haven't read his books, this is absolutely recommendable to stay until he and his friend musicians are performing after the end of the talks today. Tomorrow, we will have to talk about Germany, definitely. Obviously, because of the lawsuit against Germany on behalf of the community of Ova Herrero and Nama at the Southern District Court of New York, but also about the bureaucratic and formalistic manner the German government handles this problem. Esther and Bernardos will, together with Gesine Krüger and Andreas Schüller, deal with the lawsuit and the claims for recognition, reparation, and also land reform. But we will also discuss other Germany-related topics like the assassination of Mangabell in Cameroon, 1914. Christian will talk about that tomorrow, and about Tanzania and the returnal of bodies, of skulls, and in Moro. So we are very happy to have Moro here from the Berlin activist group Postcolonial. And in the fourth panel, we're talking about other colonial crimes with two lawyers from the Netherlands and from Belgium, Lisbeth Siegfeld, who fought very successful for the reparation of Indonesian victims of the Dutch war crimes. And that is something that has to be pointed out. I mean, like, Nikita, I'm completely on your side when you say we have to transform the poison into medicine, but there are, it's always worth to try in a concrete situation. And the Indonesian example, and this is why we want to point it out, is a very good one, because many of the survivors of the Dutch massacres and also the violation of women got reparation granted. One of the consequences of the already described unjust economic orders are ongoing human rights violations committed by national states, both home and host states of transnational corporations, and of course the corporations themselves. While our main claim is the reform of the world economic order, we cannot stay passive towards these ongoing human rights violations because the law is bad. Lawsuits have then also, have, because of that reason, have been carried out on the level of national states as well as international institutions by organizations which are represented here, the Human Rights Law Network in India, and Kranti is already here, and the Environmental Rights Action in Nigeria, represented by William Chima. One last word. The whole event was booked out very quickly. We could have looked for larger venues elsewhere, but we insisted that the Academy here at the Pariser Platz is an appropriate place for our talks, not only to host all of you and discuss with you the upcoming days, but also to try at least to have an impact on the political discussion in Germany. And also for those who are interested, we will publish a compilation of the speeches and other contributions in the aftermath of this conference. So thank you very much. Looking forward to the next 2 days. And now I have the pleasure to introduce the first two speakers to you, both of them from the already mentioned group TWAIL. The second speaker will be Makau Mutwa, who was dean at the SUNY Buffalo Law School of the State University of New York and is still teaching there. His latest book is Human Rights Standards, Hegemony, Law and Politics, but please allow me to recommend you one special article, which is my all-time favorite in of all the TWAIL publications, and that is Savages, Victims, and Savers, the Metaphor of Human Rights, which is an explicit critique of the attitude of Western human rights organizations, which is worth to be read, not only by those who are here, but also by the big human rights community in Berlin, of which I see only very few members, like Michael Winfuhr, but it's worth to spread that more. One of the reasons why these articles are not read more is that, for example, there is no translation of any article of Makau into German so far. It's a little bit different with Anthony Engi, who teaches at the National University in Singapore and the University of Utah. His most important book, if I may say, is Imperialism, Sovereignty, and the Making of International Law. And here we have at least an excerpt of his book published in the Kritische Justiz and also available online for those of you who want to follow his thought a little bit more deeply. Very warm welcome to Anthony and Makau. And Anthony, it's yours. Your floor is yours right now. Thank you.